Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, April 18th, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm about to tell everyone that we're back from spring break with a bang. I have an extra special twofer show in store for you today. My very edgy guest is here as part of both the Erotic Mind and the Sex Education series. That means this program will take a look at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative lifestyles, and because today's guest is also an author of some deliciously perverse erotica, I will be picking his brain about what makes erotic artists tick, so to speak.
Is there any danger?
Not too much. I have the pleasure of welcoming a man with a remarkably unique erotic voice. He goes by the moniker Bootbrush. His brand spankin' new book, Assimilation, Tales of Transformation and Surrender, was just published days ago. So we will be among the first people to hear about it. And if that weren't thrilling enough, Bootbrush will read from his work. I pretty much can guarantee you that this will knock your socks off, sex fans. For more of Bootbrush, visit his website, cleverly named bootbrushpup.blogspot.com. You can find him on FetLife and also follow him on Twitter, too. Look for these links in today's podcast posting. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this pervy series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish wear and gear right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick's Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site.
But isn't it a secret?
No, I want everyone to visit. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun. And, I might add, easy. Yesery sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you can shop from the privacy of your own computer. That's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Bootbrush, and thank you for joining us. I'm so delighted that we could make this time to be together. I've been looking forward to our chat since our mutual publisher turned me on to you and your new book. So now that you're here, would you like to say hello to all the really nice people?
Hello, hello, nice people.
And you should know that there's always a big load of big fat perverts in our audience as well, so you'll probably want to say hello to all of them.
Hello, and woof.
We're going to get to that, don't you know? So I want to crack open our conversation by talking about your new book, which is titled Assimilation, Tales of Transformation and Surrender. But first, I think you owe our audience an explanation. How did you come by the moniker Bootbrush? I'm guessing that this is more than a pen name, right?
It's actually been my fetish name, my name in the fetish community for about as long as I've been in the community. So, 15, maybe 20 years, I suppose, possibly. It was actually a name that was given to me by my first top, the first guy that I actually played with. And I actually have a beard. I've always had a beard from the earliest ages that I could actually grow one. Actually, I tell a lie, I didn't have a beard for about a couple of weeks at one point. Wow. When I experimented and shaved it off, and my partner took one look and went, okay, you are now dedicating an hour every day to growing it back. Because it's terrible. But, yes, a beard. I also have a bit of an obsession over boots, uh-huh. And I am quite a boot pig. and yes, kind of got myself into quite a state, licking and rubbing my face into this guy's, this top's boots. And he kind of turned around and went, "Oh gosh, I've got one hell of a little boot brush here, haven't I?" And it just clicked.
And there you go. Right.
So that's kind of been my name forever, and it now is my puppy name as well. It's my handler again. When I met my handler, he did kind of go, "Okay, well, actually that fits. I think we'll keep you as boot brush." So.
I love it. So what you're suggesting then, for our audience members who don't know Shinola about all of this stuff, is that most everybody in the scene, and we're talking BDSM, you know, alt scene, fetish scene, generally have a pseudonym, an alternative name that they go by that signifies who they are to the community.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. I suppose it's also online as well.
Right. Sure.
The introduction of being online.
Right.
And certainly in the early days, pre-Facebook and everything, it was normally expected that you had to create a new identity, you had to create a new name for signing up for websites and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And most people picked a name, you know, even if you're in the ordinary normal community and you're just joining a knitting circle,
it's true.
Or something like that.
Right, it's true.
In this community, it kind of it became natural that actually what you did was you picked the name that you were known as in the fetish community, and that became your identity.
Yeah.
And I've been through several, and still online under the various communities I'm on, there are various names that I go under, but Bootbrush is actually the one that I'm on most places by, and actually probably more people know me as Bootbrush than actually know me by my real name.
Is that
and there are actually entire people who I know physically in the real world who have never actually known me as anything other than Bootbrush.
I mean, it's the same thing here. I mean, I know lots and lots of people in the scene, and mostly I know their scene names, and I don't, even if I do know their real name, it's hard for me to, you know, interact with them as their real name, because their scene name seems so much more like them. Mostly because they chose it, and there's something to be said about, you know, people getting to name themselves. And I mean, that's, you know, my moniker, Dr. Dick. I mean, as you and I have talked about before, there's very little light between Richard Wagner and Dr. Dick. And but most everyone, you know, refers to me as that, and I like it, and so it works for me. So there you go. So let's get back to your book, Assimilation, Tales of Transformation and Surrender. I love that title. Can you tell me how you came up with it?
Well, actually, it comes, the assimilation piece actually comes from the very first story in the collection. And actually, it was one of the very first stories that I ever wrote. And actually, it was in the early days when I was first getting into rubber and getting into the rubber scene. At that point, really, rubber play was a real kind of release. The first time I came across rubber, it really kind of just exploded into my senses and into my sexual identity. And it was really such an amazing, erotic, overwhelming feeling, that this kind of being swallowed up by the rubber, the intensity of feelings that it gave to me and raised in me, that it was almost as if I was being taken over by it, absorbed by the rubber. And assimilation became part of that. And actually the story is all about being taken over by living rubber and converted and changed by the living rubber into being something else other than you were. So I suppose that's kind of, from there, actually those ideas of transformation actually became a major fascination, not even necessarily erotic fascination, but just the process of transformation, the process of change, is something that, on even on an intellectual level as well as a sexual level, I'm very interested in.
Yes.
And I think it's very a fascinating one. I suppose a bit like maybe it's something right from early puberty. You know, if you think when you go through puberty, it's actually this amazing process of change, of transformation, of
it's so true
being yourself, becoming something other than you were.
Yes, exactly.
And I suppose from that, it's always been something that I find very fascinating. Right.
So that's, I was going to say, that's why, you know, as I was reading through your book, I was thinking that, you know, it could easily have been titled Metamorphosis. You mm-hmm. do, and you're so passionate about it, and it's a really contagious passion about this. I mean, rubber's not my thing, but, you know, as I was reading along, I'm just saying, this is fascinating. This is, you know, I mean, you could be... converting people just by, you know, by your erotica.
Well, John, there's an awful lot of people that are very excited about the whole idea of converting to rubber.
I love it. I absolutely love it. The beginning is rubber, but the later part is that you become a puppy.
Yes. I suppose transformation, metamorphosis, like I say, it's actually one of my personal fascinations, mm-hmm. that kind of process. That idea that you're becoming something other than you were, that actually in a kind of a way that change is itself a form of transformation. Mm-hmm. For me, some of the stories, they cover through everything, all forms of transformations.
Yes.
I mean, yes, the first one is all about this kind of being taken over by organic rubber and transmuted and changed into something almost alien-like. There's another one that actually is about being hypnotically reprogrammed into becoming almost kind of like a sex bot, and one that's actually being almost devolved into being into a worm-like sexual fuck tube kind of.
How you do go on, sir?
It's all very odd. But yes, the one difference that tends to come through a lot is actually puppy,
right.
and pup play, because actually that is really my one main prime sexual identity, really, is as a puppy, as a dog, which is also actually part of the continually growing puppy play scene,
right.
as well, which is part of BDSM.
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to have a lot more time to talk more about that. But let me continue my questioning. I was struck by the book's dedication, which reads, "To Jeff, my lover, partner, mentor, and soulmate, thank you for rattling my cage and setting me free. Without you, I'm nothing. With you, I can be anything. And to Nigel, the man I am proud to call master and friend, thank you for showing me why we call it play and for helping me find the true pup inside myself. It's an honor to know and love you both, my beautiful, wonderful men." Mm-hmm. I thought that was so stunning.
Oh.
and there's a whole lot going on there in those few sentences, so let's see if we can pull it apart a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your master and handler is not the same person as your lover. That's very interesting. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
My partner, Jeff, he's my long-term relationship. He's my partner. We've been together for over 20 years now. I love him with everything that I am. I know it sounds deeply soppy and
but you go right ahead.
we're both actually pagans, and as part of paganism we do believe in reincarnation, and actually there's quite a I do genuinely believe that we've been through multiple lifetimes together and keep choosing to come back and meet each other.
Wow.
So it kind of goes that deep. It's a very deep emotional and very spiritual bond.
Yes.
that actually we both got. When we first met, actually, I was fairly new to being out. I was kinky, but I wasn't actually out about being kinky, and wasn't actually particularly comfortable with being kinky either. It was still kind of hidden in, well, literally, physically hidden. I had actually had an entire suitcase of rubber that I hid under my bed.
Oh, how interesting.
From everyone, so that nobody knew, because I was quite shamed about it.
How interesting.
And actually being with him, meeting Jeff and being with Jeff, actually, we did explore quite a lot of BDSM. When I finally actually confessed and showed him the rubber and stuff, it was like, oh my God, that's amazing. You know, well, actually, I used to go to heaven, and I used to do this, and I used to do the other, and actually, I'm really together. And we kind of then explored a lot of BDSM together in those early years. And actually, in that process, he helped me a lot to actually overcome a lot of my early fears, issues of guilt, that kind of thing, which is kind of, and a lot of it actually through challenging as well, and going, well, why should you feel like this, you know, why does this frighten you, come on, let's face this together, you know, that kind of thing, which is where that kind of rattling your cage, actually it's a quote from a Joan Baez song, where she sings about that her lover rattled her cage and woke her sleeping demons up. Which, and it's actually kind of our song. but actually, with our BDSM exploration, actually, it became quite quickly, it became aware that actually our tastes do differ. Mm-hmm. I love leather, but actually, rubber is my kink, really. With him, it's much more, if he has a gear fetish at all, it's for leather, but actually, he's not really necessarily into gear. He doesn't get obsessed in the way that I do over gear. Dress up is fun, but it's not a major thing for him. And there's a whole lot of other stuff. You know, he is deeply into fisting and all sorts of other things, which potentially we recognised quite early that there was, we had a lot of differences, which sometimes complemented each other, but other times didn't necessarily match.
It's like a mixed marriage, huh?
Kind of, yeah. Well, some of it is also, I have very, very submissive tendencies. Mm-hmm. And he has quite a strong switch tendencies to him. So he was, me needing a master was actually quite difficult for him, because he's not really a master. Mm-hmm. So particularly when then I started discovering and wanting to explore my puppy side, that's actually something he doesn't get at all. I mean, he can understand it's something that I am very attracted to and very drawn to, but it was not really something that he felt that he could actually get involved in. He let me explore it a little bit, but I could just see he wasn't getting it. It wasn't really doing him any good either. So that was at the point that he kind of went, well, look, you know, come on, we've been together 10 years. I know you're not going to run off with the next person you meet. This is something you want to explore, then I think you should explore it. I can see it's going to make you happy. I can see it's going to make you a fully rounded individual. So he actually then encouraged me to explore it.
That's
and in
amazing.
Doing so, to go and find someone who would help me to find it in the right way.
That is so
amazing.
And I had
been missing. That's how I then met Nigel. Was actually, I'd been chatting online to a couple of people, particularly about pup play and exploring pup play. And this one guy that I chatted to just seemed such a sane, nice person. Within about 10 minutes of talking to this guy, we were both laughing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, this is nice. This is someone actually I can get to know as a friend as well. And we finally managed to arrange to meet each other, and it was literally instantaneous, the connection that we had. And the way that he plays pup play was, he was fairly new to it as well. It was a new interest that he was exploring. But he just, it just, there was a chemistry.
Right.
That really worked perfectly together.
Right. So that's where I'd like to take you next, because the next part of that introduction or that dedication that you said is refers to Nigel, and you said, thank you for showing me why we call it play. And the reason that that struck me was that so many of the Kingsters that I know have lost that sense of play. Their involvement in the scene has become so morbidly serious that I find, and a lot of other people find, it off-putting. And I'm gathering that you feel the same way. When the play goes out of it, then what is left?
I suppose in a kind of a way, maybe it's a bit like any club or any social club that you get into. Jeff's dad used to bank model trains, which is kind of sad, but never mind, each to their own.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I mean, really, who are we to say?
He started doing that because he found it enjoyable, he found it fun. Mm-hmm. And then he went off and joined this sort of train-making society, and it all just got so over-involved in committee meetings and, you've got to use this gorge or that scale, or it all just kind of got too much, and everyone kind of, it became too serious.
Really? And it collapses in on itself, you know? I mean,
exactly.
It really is sad.
I suppose maybe the trouble is that as soon as you want something to be important to you, it then starts becoming serious about it.
Right.
You know, that it's important, so I've got to be serious, you know, which is a real shame, because actually, particularly with something like kink and sex in general, I mean, you know, when it comes down to it, it really is God having a laugh, you know, and if God isn't going to take it that seriously, how can we, you know, anything that makes that face cannot
really
be something you've got to take seriously.
I love it.
You know,
you and I are on the same page when it comes to that. And, you know, I tell my clients, you know, the ones who come to me for sex therapy, and I was going, you know, if this is work, then you're doing it wrong.
You're
you know,
wrong.
If it's sex play. It's play. It, you know,
yes,
and
it's
playful.
Play.
You know, and if it's so serious that, you know, or you're working at it, then you know something is out of whack.
Exactly. I mean, it's really sexuality and particularly kink, and it really is. It's a huge, great, big fucking toy box.
Yes.
And surely you've got to approach it in the same kind of a way that a kid does when they go into a candy store. You know, you've got to go, oh my God, whoa! I've got to try this, and I've got to try that. Ooh, I didn't really like that one, so I'm not going to eat that one again, but I'll try that one instead. You know, you've got to really approach it. I suppose it's a bit like another one. What's her name? The Color Purple. It's that same. When God invented purple, he's probably going to get really pissed off when you don't walk past it and go, wow, that's beautiful. It's kind of the same. You know, sex is so much fun, you have got to enjoy it.
Right.
And if you're not enjoying it, like you say, you probably are doing something wrong, or you're taking it too seriously. At the same time, I can understand why people do, and why, if it's important to them and it means something to them, they invest power into it, and it becomes something that they want to take seriously. And I know some people do actually get quite upset, actually, over even the puppy play thing. And actually, some of the people in the BDSM community find puppy play really difficult, because it is very playful, and it's romping about, and it's being silly, and it's being like a puppy. Mm-hmm. And they kind of frown on it and go, it should be more serious than that.
Can you be a serious puppy? What's wrong with you?
Well, actually, if you look at how a child plays, play to a young child is actually the most important thing in their world.
Exactly.
It's how they explore their world. It's how they test and prove their imaginations. It's how they forge relationships with other people. It's how they explore how they fit in the world.
Yes.
And play isn't something silly or throwaway. Play is actually something incredibly important. It's one of the ways that we step out of the world and into some place else.
Mm-hmm.
That's outside of the world, that allows us to be and explore and to play. So I'm all for take it seriously and treat it responsibly, and treat everyone who plays with respect, and let it be important, but let it be playful. And after all, you know, what better release is than laughter?
Right. So your book is basically a book of erotica. and kinky, dirty, disgusting, and perverted erotica, I'm happy to report. So what I really want to do is prevail upon you to read a juicy snippet from your book. Any chance you could do that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yay.
Why not? I thought I'd try being read to.
Especially
oh, you love to read too. Oh, joy. I thought I'd one of the pieces that is actually about puppy play or starting into puppy play, which is actually one that was inspired by one of my friends and is called A Northern Kennel.
A Northern Kennel.
Kennel, yes. As in Northern England.
Got it.
A young, nervous lad, beads of sweat glossing his newly shaved head, stands at a normal-looking door in a northern English town. He anxiously glances both ways down the street, and then looks down at his feet, encased in tall, glossy black rangers. Every line of his body reveals the internal fight against fear and nervous anxiety, the debate whether to run or to stay. He swallows nervously, licks his lips from a dry mouth, and rubs a damp palm down the side of his jeans. But then that nervously rubbing hand drifts up to the tight denim across his crutch, rubs the hard curve of arousal that betrays his real excitement. For a moment, the hand stays cupped, and his nervous face shifts into a decision. A small nod to himself, a brief squaring of shoulders, then he reaches out and pushes the bell. There's nothing for a moment, and then the door opens. A dark figure stands in the gloomy interior. The weak sunlight glints from his leather jeans and heavy Wesco boots. No words are spoken, but the boy ducks his head slightly, looks down at those shining boots in nervous respect. The figure watches for a moment, then gives the smallest of gestures, shifting slightly to one side. The boy takes his cue, steps to the door, and then over the threshold. Briefly, they brush against each other in the closeness of the doorway. The boy hesitates, and then finally he looks up into the figure's eyes. So, pup, you ready for this? The boy swallows again, licks his lips, looks deep into the man's eyes. Yes, sir. Please, sir. Please. I want to be your dog. With a smile, the figure reaches one hand up to cup the back of the boy's head. With the other, he slowly pushes the door closed. It clicks shut with the sound of finality. Inside. In the center of a room, the boy now stands, booted feet planted solidly, hands behind his back and his shoulders squared, his head bowed. He stands and waits in respectful silence. In the corner, silent and comfortable in a leather chair, sits the man from the doorstep. His one booted foot rests on the other. The shadows seem to cling to him as he sits and watches the boy, obedient, patient, waiting for his commands. He lets the boy wait a few moments more, then he gets up, walks over, enjoys seeing the young man tense a little. The man walks around him slowly, inspecting the boy with his eyes. The boy trembles slightly under his silent gaze. Finally, the man speaks. So, you want to be a dog, boy? He enjoys seeing the trembling increase, the nervous flick of a tongue. Enjoys seeing the boy fight with his urge to look up from the floor, meet this man's eyes. But instead, a shaky voice answers. Yes, sir. Please, sir. I want to be your dog, sir. Ah, but boy, to be a dog, to be my dog, there'll have to be some changes. The man reaches out to the trembling lad, places a hand upon the back of his head. He gently strokes the naked scalp and smiles as he feels the tension relax a little as the lad gives an involuntary sigh. Do you think you can make those changes, boy? Do you think you have what it makes to be my dog? Yes, sir. Please, sir. The boy almost shouts his response, and the man smiles once again to see the urgency of this young man's hunger. Ah, but to become my pup, you will need to be stripped and shaved, then your body encased in a glossy rubber coat. Will I have your hands turned into paws and your head transformed by a hood? You'll be made to look as close to the real dog that you are, maybe even with a tail. Do you think that you can cope with that, boy? could think you could cope with being made into a real rubber dog. Once more, he is pleased to see the boy shudder, and notes the hard curve of his arousal in his jeans. He smiles at how the boy seems to have lost his voice, and can merely nod his head. And then he hears, so quietly, the lad's voice, choked, urgent and trembling. "Yes, sir. I know, sir. Please, sir." The man strokes down onto the boy's neck, rubs his ear. "My pup will need to be trained in whatever manner I see fit. It might be drugged or hypnotized, brainwashed and pre-programmed. Whatever I deem necessary to help it to become a true pup. Can you surrender to that boy? Will you devote yourself to becoming a real dog? Will you devote yourself to being my dog?" The stroking hand stops, cups the boy's chin and tilts the face up, studies the slight tremble in the lip and the wet, downcast eyes. "Can you embrace your own fantasies, pup, and live like a dog? Live as my dog?" Almost whispering now, the boy finally looks up into his eyes, and the man reads there all the hunger and the need and the surrender that he needed to see. "Yes, sir. Please, sir. Let me be your dog, sir." "Okay, pup. Then let's begin."
Holy cow. Holy cow. Holy cow. I mean, so much is going on there. I mean, for those in our audience who have never imagined such a thing, that is a brilliant introduction.
Oh, thank you.
It really is. I mean, it captures both, you know, the dom and the sub, and, you know, the dynamic and, you know, the psychology, the eroticism. It's extremely well done. Thank you for sharing that.
I suppose one of the things was particularly trying to get across that feeling of sort of nervous anticipation and being frightened and kind of wanting something, but having to almost fight with yourself to enable yourself to go for it and to embrace it. And with that top, you know, kind of going, well, can you do that?
Yeah.
This is going to be a struggle. It's going to be something you have to work towards. Are you prepared to make that sacrifice? Are you prepared to embrace what you want?
Right. Wow. Probably should also mention to our audience that the background noises is your parrot.
Oh, can you hear the parrot? Okay.
It added something really wonderful to your reading. Is that somebody whimpering in the background? How lovely. I mean, that's really great. I'm glad she could join us.
She joined us, yeah.
So, you write on page 12 of your book, "Transformation, Perversity, Surrender, and Submission." The stories in this anthology feature many of the same themes, and most of them are wrapped in a dark, glossy, hypnotic skin of rubber. How did you hit upon rubber as your fetish object?
Well, actually, originally, I suppose, my first proper fetish object was actually leather.
Is that right? Well, because it's more popular and more available?
I suppose, yes, because it is more available. I actually have an older brother, straight. Mm. Older brother. He was as older brothers tend to do, he was a biker and he had a big motorbike. And he's so much bigger than me and big, huge. He was the man that I wished that I could be, because I'm this wee little skinny thing. Midget, and he was a bodybuilder, and you know, I really wanted to be him. Maybe that's also where some of my transformation fantasies come from. Was this thing of I wished I was my brother kind of thing. So leather was the first gear fetish that I remember having, and really seeing men in leather and going, oh, I wish I could be like them. I want to worship them so that I will become them, that kind of thing.
It's involved with hyper-masculinity, is it not?
Exactly, on so many levels, you know, yes. Shamanic levels and stuff, always has that kind of taking on the skin of the animal and taking on its power, you know. Actually, leather has a very organic feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Rubber, when I actually first came in, I only came across rubber, well, I suppose very loosely, very briefly touched upon it, actually, with things like divers and men in rubber suits and that sort of functional side of rubber. But actually, rubber and latex and fetish rubber I actually only came across when I went into my first fetish shop, which was actually when I was still totally in the closet and studying at university in London. And went into my first fetish shop and actually spent hours sort of in the back room touching the leather and smelling the rubber and seeing all these amazing men wandering around and dark glasses and looking at me and keep thinking, oh my God, is one of them going to kidnap me and carry me away into their dungeon?
Please. Choose me too. Oh, come on. And it's also aphrodisiacal, is it not? I mean, to walk into, you know, a sex shop like that and, you know, the aromas of, you know, the accoutrement. I mean, it's just astonishing. I mean, just overwhelming.
Whether you actually pump poppers into the...
I know.
Shop I used to go into. They used to pipe poppers actually into the air conditioning in the one shop that I used to go into, which is an excellent way of creating more sales. Because you'd end up being so turned on that you'd end up going, oh, I've got to have all this stuff. It just makes me feel so good. And I realize that because you were off your rocks on poppers.
I love it.
Never mind. So yes, I love leather, and I probably would have bought full leather if I could have afforded it, but actually being a poor little struggling student, what I could afford was rubber. Mm-hmm. And almost kind of got into rubber initially, possibly in the same way that a lot of people do, actually almost as a second choice, because it was cheaper.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that'll do. I want transformation. I want to be changed. I want to be dressed differently.
Uh-huh.
And this is a cheaper way of being able to do it.
Right.
That was until I tried it on. And then as soon as I tried the rubber on, it is just such an amazingly intense physical experience. Leather is amazing. Leather is like this armor that you put on, and it's tight and it restricts you, and it's a protective armor against the world almost. Rubber is this much more intimate experience. There is the way that it stretches and gives, but still contains you. Every time that you move, it flexes and moves with you, and then almost snaps back and pulls you back into position. So it's almost like this interplay between you and the material itself. Plus the feeling that when you rub a hand over rubber, over rubber skin, it transmits this sort of squeaking vibration across your skin that feels larger and longer and further than actually the touch itself. So it's an amazing feeling. And in a kind of a way, rubber is purely made for sex. I mean, if you think the first time you ever put on a condom, if you're a guy, first time you ever put on a condom and how that feels against your skin, of how it feels against your cock. Imagine your entire body being covered in that, and those sensations transmitted across your whole body. That feeling of being encased and yet totally naked, totally exposed. It's amazing. It's a fantastic experience. And I suppose the more I've got into rubber and the more I've worn rubber within sexual experiences, the more rubber becomes associated with sex. Until now, it is, you know, literally just the smell or the touch of rubber can actually make me hard just in itself, you know.
Well, with that, sir, I'm looking at my clock and I see that our time for today is up. In fact, we're a little over time. But I'm not going to let you go like this.
Oh.
I mean, not like when you're talking like that, don't you know? So I'm going to have to insist that you come back next week. Please, 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 please.
Oh, definitely.
Far
too much to make this a one-off.
Terrific. But before we go, could I ask you to give us your website address, walk us around a little bit, and tell us where we can buy your book?
Okay. I actually have two websites, but actually the one that I maintain the most is my blog, which is where actually I post up stories that I'm working on. It's also where I post up all of my experiences in pub play, and write accounts of what I've been getting up to with my partner, or what I've been doing with my handler, the training that we've had, places we've been, that kind of thing. And the address for that is, unsurprisingly, bootbrushpup, with one word, .blogspot.com.
Cool. So,
as to where you can buy the book, Assimilation, Tales of Transformation and Surrender, written by Bootbrush, it is available, well, at the moment it's available on Amazon.
Because it's brand new. Brand new.
See, it only came out last week. Right. It's available on Amazon.com at the moment. Hopefully it should be available on all the other versions, and Barnes & Noble, and all good bookstores.
And some of the bad ones, too.
And some of the bad ones, too. it's available in paperback, but it is also available in electronic format. On Amazon, it's available as a Kindle book, and it is shortly, hopefully, going to be available on things like iTunes as iBooks and all the rest. Shortly. It just takes a little while for them to convert and make them available.
Do you have a link on your Blogspot blog?
I do, yes.
Oh, good. That's where people can find a direct link to you.
There is like a link to Bootbrush on Amazon, which actually takes you through to my author page.
Great.
On Amazon, which then links to all the books as well.
Great.
So.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much for your time. I eagerly anticipate our chat next week. And until then, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Pretty fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week at this same time for part two of my conversation with Bootbrush and more. Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd better just call off the search right now.
Well, why are you telling everyone?
Because I've put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my sex toy review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Again, look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll be so glad you did. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.